to Vit Friends Podcast, Living Life and Love. I'm your host, Mark Braxton from Raleigh, North Carolina. Vit Friends is a national vitiligo support community founded by Valerie Molyneux. For more information about Vit Friends, you can visit us at www.vitfriends.org. You can also call us at 844-374-3639. Again, that is 844-374-3639. Welcome to Living Life and Love. I'm your host, Mark Braxton from Raleigh, North Carolina. So on today's show, I have two special guests. I have Scott and Kevin. So welcome, fellas. How are you?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well. Can't complain. Well, I can't complain. Our weather's crazy, but beyond that, I'm doing well. Hopefully you two are. So this is what we're going to do. Before we get into our discussion, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourselves so our listening audience can know who's on my show. So we'll start with Scott.
Sure. I am Scott Catterlick. I'm a CPA in Minneapolis, or in Eden Prairie, the suburbs. I manage a 20-person accounting firm. I've been doing comedy for 16 years. I've had vitiligo for about 35 years. And I'm glad that Alicia had connected. I ran into Alicia on the streets of New Prague, Minnesota. Anybody I see with vitiligo, it's like, hey, we're vitiligo buddies. And then the minute I meet her, all of a sudden I'm hooked into this organization. It's like, oh, sorry I met you. I'm really enjoying it. And Alicia's been great. And she does so much for the organization and making awareness. And I think that's wonderful. So.
Absolutely. And she is a wonderful person. But you know what's funny? I've never met Alicia in person.
Okay.
I will meet her for the first time when I go to Minnesota. So it's okay. Great. I'll have that opportunity to actually speak to her and give a high five, fist bump, whatever we're going to do.
Yeah.
Let me throw it over to Kevin. Welcome, Kevin. Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Kevin Saha. I am a stand-up comedian. That's just what I do. Been on Showtime. I've just released a comedy album that went out on Pandora, Spotify, and all the other streaming stuff. I've been doing comedy for 16 years, vitiligo. To my knowledge, I would say about 5 years. Before that, I just had white spots that I wasn't sure about what they were.
Right.
And I just kind of played it off as it was just, maybe I spilled bleach. I don't know.
but yeah, I got vitiligo.
Once I got diagnosed, then I that's when I realized, like, yeah, I get sunburned very easily on those spots, and it hurts. And I'm right. Like, oh, now I knew what to look for and what to look out for. So,
what's funny is when I sunburn, I don't get it. Doesn't hurt. It gets beet red, but then there's no pain like a normal sunburn on pigmented skin. So,
and I don't get sunburn at all. I've worked summer camps, and I'm out in the sun and all day long. You know, I put on my sunscreen, but I don't get sunburn. Now, probably if I went to the beach and sat there all day, I would. But, I guess everybody's skin's just a little different, of course. So let's talk about vitiligo. You know, that journey's different for everybody. So, Kevin, you're the newbie to vitiligo. You know, I've had it for 25 plus years, and Scott 35. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you saw it. You said, "Oh man, looks like bleach, or maybe I bleached my skin or something." What are some other thoughts or feelings that came about once you were told, "Hey, you have this thing called vitiligo"?
Honestly, I'm extremely pale, so it's not a huge deal. Like, in the winter, you can't even tell that I have it. So,
here in Minnesota, we only have vitiligo for 6 months.
Yeah.
Right.
But I do have, like, white spots in the beard, and that's the noticeable one. But then at the same time, I'm 42, so I can play that off, too.
Absolutely.
But it was different. I know a lot of people bring up the Michael Jackson thing, and it's just like,
right.
Yeah, he had it.
Right.
But no, and I think now that I can look up like different things, because like I said, I would get like, I got it on my hands. When I get too much sun, it would get like blistery almost, like just like I'd get like acne, it felt like, and it would hurt. And I didn't understand what was going on. But now that I know, it's like, it kind of helped me out a little bit finding out what it was.
Now, real quick before we get to Scott, I wonder if, the regions that we live in play a big part of how much we get burnt or not. You know, I'm not sure. I never asked that question to the doctor. You know, I just, you know, hey, I have vitiligo, you know, protect yourself in the sun. But I can almost imagine, you know, depending on where you live in the world, you know, whether you get more sunburn or whether it's more serious than others and to what degree. That's a good question. You know, I wonder about that. But let's go to Scott. Let's talk about your vitiligo, you know, when you were first diagnosed and, you know, your thoughts and feelings, and then we'll dig into some other questions.
You know, I really haven't spent a lot of time with doctors on it. Anybody that I've talked to has said, well, there's nothing we can do about it. You know, unless right. you want to go through the lasers and that kind of stuff. And so most of the skin doctors here really don't spend a whole lot of time on it. They don't, you know, they don't worry too much about it. The good thing is it's not going to kill me. And that, right. It's not like diabetes. It's not like a cancer. It's spots. And again, you know, like I say, in Minnesota, I have it for 6 months a year. And then, you know, November comes and it gets cold and any tan you had disappears instantly. And, right. It's almost, it's kind of like when you go to the airport, you know, and you go on a nice trip and you get a nice tan. When you come back into Minnesota, the fans underneath those doors that you open up just sucks the tan right off of you. And so, you know, it's never bothered me. I've got spots and right, you know, right. Does it bother me? No. And it's funny because over the course of the summer now, my spots will become more prominent. And then by the fall, all of a sudden they disappear completely. And so, right. you know, and I'm symmetrical. I've got it in my both hands and, you know, my feet, it looks like I have golf socks on, you know, it is, it's right. perfect. You know, it's perfect. You know, cuts off right at the top of my golf socks and people are like, oh, you golf a lot. No, I have vitiligo and it really, you know, I've got white feet and it's weird. And so it's never bothered me. Like I say, if I get out and I'm in the sun too long, you know, my hands will get beet red,
right?
But they won't hurt. And I don't, you know, it doesn't bother me. Even underneath my eyes, it'll get beet red also, but never a big pain, you know, where, but I will, you know, it will dry out fast and it will flake. And all of a sudden I'm
right.
shedding skin everywhere, which is
absolutely
kind of weird. So, but, so yeah, it hasn't, and again, emotionally, I'm not bothered, you know, and again, right. you know, people of color who really have it, you know, boy, I see that and that's hard. I to me that would be very, very hard. You know, and I know what it is, doesn't bother me. And again, like I say, half of the year, I don't have it. Right. But boy, people who have lost pigment in their hands and face and boy, that's got to be a little bit more of a challenge for them.
And that's the thing too. I was going to say, like, as far as when you see other people who have it, you kind of want to say something, but you don't know where they're at with it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then
absolutely.
You're like, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, like if they maybe they don't even know what it is, you know, and then you're just telling right. them, and it's like, you don't want to be that person. So it's kind of, hard to bring it up.
Yeah. But we were in Vegas one time and right. the blackjack dealer had vitiligo and the guy next to me had vitiligo. It's like, hey, we're all vitiligo buddies and they still took our money. And so
right. Now, what is unique? I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when you talk about people of color, it is a different experience. Because in the winter, you can't hide it, you know.
Yeah.
In the summer, you can't hide it. It's right. there, you know. Yeah. And I remember talking to a gentleman that he's darker complexion than myself. You know, I'm light, but you can still see my vitiligo around.
Yep.
But this gentleman said, and he was really serious about it. He said, you know, I'm no longer black, you know? And I said, that's not true. I said, your skin may be changing, but it doesn't take away your ethnicity or your identity or your values or any of that. It just makes your skin a different color, but you are still who you were born. You know, it doesn't take away any of that.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing because I had a kid today at school point out to me, he said, you know, you have white skin just like I do. He said, but you also have black skin. I said, yeah. I said, that's what vitiligo does. It changes, it takes away the pigmentation, which is, you know, I showed him my natural color and explained to him. And he's just like, okay, that's fine. You know, and that's how I think the kids are at that stage where I'm fine. It's okay. I still like you regardless. But as the adults, you know, we get into this thing of ownership over vitiligo. But I think, you know, if we do the research, it affects anybody around the world. Doesn't matter what your ethnicity is. Doesn't matter about your economics. None of that. Religion, politics, none of it matters because it affects any one of us. And that's what we need to take with it, you know, instead of pointing out, well, that person's white, they can't have vitiligo, they don't experience this and that. No, we all have the same condition. None of that matters, you know?
Yeah. Well, and there was too, I had a couple people that asked if it's contagious, you know?
Yeah. Did you touch them?
You touch them, yeah.
start chasing them around.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's contagious.
So, you know, and that, but that brings back to the question is what causes it? You know, and right. No one's ever told me the cause and what changes and what forces, you know, that on us. I mean, if someone said, hey, because you ate too many cheeseburgers as a kid, you know, you got vitiligo. I mean,
I could tell you exactly when it happened for me was I was doing a huge New Year's Eve show and we had like $4,000 invested in this. And I mean, it was December 19th and I sold 4 tickets. And I went to bed and I woke up in the morning and I was gonna brush my teeth and I saw a white spot on my beard.
Stress.
And I was like, where did that spot come from? Yeah. And I just it wasn't there the night before. All of a sudden it just was there and it just kept growing and all of a sudden I saw it on my hands and it just and it was just that stress. I mean the show we broke even, so that all worked out, but that was when I realized like that's what it was. It was stress. It was just that much stress just kicked it in.
I'm going to share my first experience with a dermatologist, because when I started my vitiligo, you know, of course you don't know what's happening because, you know, this is the 90s. It's not a lot of information. Of course, we know about Michael Jackson. And there was controversy with that. You know, he's bleaching the skin and all this. And as I was starting to see my own skin change, I went to a dermatologist. And my experience was I laugh at it because it was horrible. I sat in the room and waited and waited and waited. I probably read every magazine in there. He walked in. He sat across from me. I feel like he didn't even look at me, you know. And back then, you know, when you go into a doctor's, you know, we used to do the least let me put the little blue robe on or something. And, you know, we didn't even do the cough test, nothing. You know, he just walked in and looked at me and walked out. And I'm like, wow. This man must have some magic. He didn't even have to look at me or anything. And then he came back with a pamphlet and a prescription. You have vitiligo. Well, how do you know? You didn't look at me. Like, you didn't examine, at least check a pulse or something. You know, he just automatically assumed, I know what you have. This is what you need. And bye. And I sat in the car for a minute. And I'm thinking to myself, man, what just happened? Like, that was horrible. And everyone in this area that sees that doctor has the same experience, even to this day. Huh. And it's like, he should not deal with any vitiligo patients, you know. but it is one of those things where, you know, vitiligo is going to do what it wants to do. And I do find when I'm stressed, highly stressed, I get more spots. So I try not to stress, you know. I try to paint, draw, whatever, you know. You'll find I laugh a lot. Because I try not to stress about things, although things are stressful. And, you know, it's just weird, you know. And I've had people say, well, you don't have much on your face. No, I don't have to have it on my face. I still have vitiligo, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the myths about vitiligo. You know, what are some things that you guys have heard about vitiligo and you come to find out, besides it being contagious, that you found out that's not true?
Well, they're not so much true, but they say also trauma can have an effect on your vitiligo. Now, when I was a kid, I was climbing on something I shouldn't have, fell back, landed on concrete, hit my head. You know, did that cause at least the start of it?
Right.
When we were in our 20s, we were in a significant car accident. You know, did that cause, but my wife doesn't have it. So you know who has it? And when you say stress causes it, and I work in an industry that's pretty stressful. We got a lot of tax returns and all that stuff that and a due date. But I'm the only one with vitiligo, so you know, is it? You know, I guess I'm not applying enough stress to the people around me. Yet,
so. If it was really stress, it'll be a nation, a world full of vitiligo people.
Yes, like, everybody
want to be turned. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, my mom told me that I don't eat enough protein, so
okay, get the rickets.
And she must know. I don't know. My doctor didn't know that, but she.
Look, I'm gonna tell y'all the greatest remedy I was told. And my foolish self at that time tried it. Somebody was like, oh, vitiligo is just a fungus. Get some Head and Shoulders and rub it on your skin. And I'm thinking, that's stupid, but I'm going to try it anyway. Yeah. I'm like, well, my skin feels smooth, but let me go and put it in my hair. That's where it should be. You know.
And but, I used Head and Shoulders all the time. It didn't, you know, now I got vitiligo, you know, and you know, and, or, deodorant with a lot of aluminum in it, you know, is that a problem? And is that what's causing it?
Right.
On top of the Alzheimer's that you can get, all those things, you know, so
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it'll all kill us.
Eventually. Yeah. Yeah. And, but you know what, but that's the thing. When we talk to our community, we have to encourage people who are really struggling with it to know that it is not going to kill you. However, you know, I do understand the challenges that come with it. You know, I dealt with the depression, the anxiety and all that good stuff and the low self-esteem because, you know, you look in the mirror, you start to see yourself change and you just don't know how much or when it's going to do its thing. Even to this day, you know, I still wonder, well, it's all over my body. I don't have much on my face, but is that going to change? I have a spot on my neck that I watch often has not changed in years. Around my mouth has not changed in years. Yeah. So I'm like, well, maybe I'm okay, but I don't know. Plus, in a moment's notice, vitiligo can say, hey, guess what? I'm going to take over your whole body and nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know?
But it doesn't change you as a person.
No, and not at all.
That, you know, I've got 500 clients and nobody's ever said, hey, we're not going to go to Scott because he's got vitiligo or he's got spots on his face or his hands are spotty. Right. Nobody's ever, you know, nobody's ever made a comment about it, you know, which is odd, but yet, you know, it's something that, you know, I can get through the day without having any additional stresses because I have vitiligo.
Absolutely. Well, I think the problem lies within us.
Yeah.
We see things as a problem because, you know, I think deep down in our core, we are vain to a certain extent. We all want to look good and, you know, and then we start to change a little bit. We're like, wait a minute. Oh, I don't like that. And vitiligo is something you really can't change. You can get a treatment.
Right.
And we're going to talk about that in a minute, but you can get a treatment, but it's not guaranteed to work. And your vitiligo can spread. And I think from there, we just think the worst. We see ourselves as our own monster, you know, like a monster movie. And no, we have to look at ourselves as human beings first. We're people, you know. Kevin, have you tried any treatments at all? Anything?
Well, when you said that there was a fungus, I was before I had it. I was looking up, and somebody said it might be ringworm, because it was like one spot on my leg. So there was like this, and I think it was just lavender oil, but I bought it. It was like $40, and I'm like, we'll see if this works, right. And I put it on and it got beet red and it hurt and nothing else happened. And I'm like, the white spot's back. It must not be that. So that's when I went to the doctor and I'm like, what? I can't get rid of this spot. See, and like for my doctor, she actually cut a big chunk right out of it to do the biopsy. She's like, I'm going to do a little biopsy. And I thought it'd be like a little piece, but no, she took out, I mean, it was a huge,
wow.
It was like two stitches. I was like, whoa. So then, went to work because I was working that day, and I went to work at the day job that I had for a little bit, and she called the next day and she's just like, oh yeah, vitiligo, and I was like, it's not ringworm. She goes, no, it's not ringworm. But it is funny how like so many people tell you what it is before you.
Right.
It's like, oh no, that's not it. It's this and it's this. And
no, I used to have a spot in the top of my head. And I was getting my hair cut one day and my barber asked me, she said, what's that? I said, it's the same thing as this, you know, I showed her my hands. Yeah. I said, but it's gone. Like that spot disappeared. But it thinned out my hair in certain areas. Like where I had two spots actually, and it's kind of thin. I'm like, oh, thanks, vitiligo. You'll make me go bald before I want to, you know. But it's one of those things that I think it comes along with the territory. I didn't do any, I did the cream. And I talk about it often on the podcast. It was nothing to me. It was like putting on lotion. So I stopped. It was expensive lotion that did nothing. I was offered the laser surgery, the light box treatment. I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that. At this point, I'm Superman. I'm tough. But then I realized Superman has some kryptonite. And part of that kryptonite for me was finding a support group. And that's what I needed. And I waited to 2019 to seek out support, which changed my life, basically, my whole outlook on how I see myself. And I think for our community, that's important. Support groups are very important. You know, finding people who are going through the same journey, the same thing you're going through, that understand it. Now, I know, Scott, you've had some interaction with Alicia. Kevin, do you interact with Alicia much as well?
She came to a show. And that's because she was told that I told a joke about having vitiligo. Her friend was at the show. She told her, and then the next time I was in the area, she showed up and she got a hold of me, and that's how I got introduced with her. So she'll come to a couple shows, like if she sees them in the area, but,
awesome.
Every once in a while we'll text, but yeah, I mean, that's how it all kind of started. Is I had the spots and I thought, you know what, I'm going to talk about it on stage because why not? You know, I bring it up and I started just explaining what it was. Cause I thought, you know, I'm going to tell you why, and you can't really see the spots, but I'm going to tell you I have, and this is, and it's, then I did a Michael Jackson kind of, you know, a little joke about the Michael Jackson and
your affinity for young boys.
I bet you moonwalked across that stage, didn't you? Exactly.
No, I just do the high pitched, you know, move on. But yeah, that's how she got a hold of me. She just figured it out. Cool. I was like, that was when I got. But see, and then, like for me, I never was. I guess I'm pretty good. Like I don't have anxiety and stuff. So when this started happening, I always look at it as it's not my problem. It's your problem if you have an issue with
it. Absolutely.
And I never looked at it as, and maybe I'm just not like, I don't care what I look like as much. Maybe I don't know, but for me, it's like, hey, I got spots. If you don't like it, that's a you problem. You know.
Absolutely.
My mother-in-law sold makeup for Elizabeth Arden and a number of the different places, and you know, I went to her and I said, you know, I've got these spots showing up on my hands. And she said, well, let's try some tanning solution. You know, thinking, well, all it did was made the dark spots even darker.
So not only
and, you know, and then you did some rings around them, and then, yeah, you had these little rings that were, you know, surrounding these white areas. And, yeah, it was a mistake. But yeah, we tried, you know, we tried some different stuff, but nothing. Yeah, the creams didn't do anything for me either. And you know, again, I don't have any pain with it, and I know it's not going to kill me, right. So I'm okay. And you know, I don't have little kids laughing at me or doing anything like that either. So then, you know, I can live with that too. So.
Oh, and little kids are funny. I had a little girl one time and working a camp, and she looked at me. She kept staring. I'm like, okay, why is this little girl staring at me? She said, "Mr. Mark, you look like a cow. I'm going to eat you." And I was like, what? You can't eat me. I'm a human being. But I think she must have gone home and told her mother she was going to eat me because I looked like a cow, because the next day she came and apologized. You know, okay. Like, it's okay. I mean, yeah. I didn't think you're really going to stab me with a knife and cut me up and start eating me. No. But kids see things from a different view than the adults.
Which is really refreshing.
Yes. Adults are brutal. Like, we make comments to hurt and to do damage, but the kids, they're curious. They want to touch it. Does it hurt? And yes, I'm that guy that if you touch my skin, I go, ow. Oh, no, it doesn't hurt. I'm kidding. You know, but then I would play around with it. They're like, well, what happened to your skin? I said, nothing happened to it. I have bio-enhanced camouflage. I said, what's that? I said, I can blend in with everybody. So I'll just find a couple of kids, my complexion, somebody. and just stand between them, and they're like, "Oh, that is so cool." I'm like, "Okay, I gotta have fun with this too," you know.
Yeah.
and we're gonna get to the comedy part of it. I think it once we get to a stage of acceptance of our condition, we learn how to laugh about it. You know, some of the things that we go through are funny. You know, when we look back on it, may have been hurtful at the time, but we look back and it's like, oh man, that was actually funny, but I couldn't laugh at the time. I was dating someone and she used to always crack jokes on me because I wore these long sweaters to cover my hands. Like I would pull them over the tips of my fingers so you couldn't see my vitiligo. And she would always say, "Why are you wearing those Mr. Rogers sweaters all the time?" And I'm like, "I like my sweaters." But now I'm feeling self-conscious about my sweaters. I'm like, come on, man. I'm trying to hide my vitiligo. Now I got issues with the sweaters, you know. But it's one of those things we do, you know. But let's talk about comedy. You two are comedians. How did you get involved in the comedy business?
I'll go. I've always dreamed of being on Johnny Carson. So when I sat for the CPA exam, you know, so this is 40 years ago, 38 years ago, Johnny Carson was still on. And
right.
And I laid awake at night before the CPA exam, and I envisioned myself coming in and performing comedy on the stage, coming through the curtains and doing the whole, it was, you know. Well, I didn't, that, you know, I'm in my 20s, I did nothing. So now I'm 45 years old. I'm the president of the Rotary Club in the area. And I decide that every president has their own little thing. Well, my thing was going to be joke of the day. So each week that we had our meetings, I made sure I had jokes to tell everybody. And then that invited other people to have jokes. And so we would always do some jokes. Well, you learn how to tell a joke. Jokes are hard. I mean, you got to learn how to tell them. And so, you know, over the course of my year, I learned how to tell a joke and I talked to people who knew how to tell jokes and try to figure out, you know, hey, this would be kind of cool. Louis Anderson was having a contest he performed at the Northrop Auditorium for New Year's Eve and whoever won the contest got to perform with him on New Year's Eve. Well, he was looking for young new comedians and I thought, oh, this is gonna be great. And I spent the year, I didn't do anything. I didn't get anything prepared. Well, they had the contest and I didn't perform. And so I thought, well, next year I'm gonna do it. Well, the next year he doesn't have the contest. And so now I spent the year, I had my 3 minutes of material. I was all set. And you know, when you've got 3 minutes of material, the only place you could go is to Acme Comedy Company in Minneapolis. And if you're a first timer, you're guaranteed to get on. So I came home from work. I said, "Honey, we're going down to Acme on Monday night. I'm gonna perform comedy, and we're gonna bring some friends." And we went down. We just had a great time. The amazing thing is they laughed at all the right spots.
Good.
And I had practiced my 3 minutes. I had my 3 minutes, but I didn't allow time for laughter. And so, at Acme, I got to my 3 minutes. All of a sudden, you know, the light's blinking. I have no idea why the light was blinking, but that was telling me to get off the stage. And then they shut off the microphone and I had to finish my last joke without a microphone. Wow. Because I went over my 3 minutes because people laughed during my comedy. And so, you know, you get hooked. And I worked a lot with Scott Hansen in town. Scott's a nationally known, but you know, he made comedy in Minneapolis here. And then I've worked with Louis a number of times over the course of the years, actually, because of Scott Hansen and the connection there. But I've opened for Jimmy Walker and Judy Tenuta and Jeff Cesario and Alex Cole and Wild Bill Bauer, all the local comics that were just fabulous guys. And they gave you time and they helped you out, you know. Yeah, I was a schmuck, you know, I'm an accountant, for God's sake. What am I doing, you know, doing comedy for? And but I had, you know, just a great time doing it, and you get hooked in. I mean, the bottom line is you get hooked in, and other comics don't like me because I have a day job and I don't have to earn any money doing comedy, and so I know that pisses them off. But at the end of the day, I just really enjoy getting in front of people and telling a joke that will make them laugh. And so it, you know, I've been doing it for 15, 16 years, and I've performed in Vegas and Omaha and all over Minnesota here and just had a great time with it. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Laughter is very important. And we definitely need some laughter now. The world.
Oh, absolutely. And my clients, you know, I have to sit in front of clients every day and convince them to do something. Well, that's what comedy is. You're convincing them to follow you down the street, and then you take the left turn on them and, right. and, you know, and shake them up a little bit. And so I do it every day, and yet, you know, it's still fun to get out and do it in front of strangers and have a great time doing it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Kevin, tell us a little bit about your comedy experience.
Well, first I want to say, for the record, I don't think comics are upset that you have a day job. Because I think the majority of comics have a day job. There's not many of us doing it full time. But the other thing, too, is like, if you're doing it full time, you're not doing the fun gigs. You're doing the corporates and, you know, the ones that the HR person is staring at you. Just waiting to pounce.
Yes, yes.
But no, I as far as how I got started, when I was in high school, I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. That was my plan. But I grew up in the middle of Wisconsin. So middle of nowhere, no idea how to do it. I knew I had to move to New York. And then I looked at housing over there and like apartments. And I'm like, yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to do it. So I just moved on with my life. I'm like, I guess it's just, you know, something that a small town person can't do. And when I was 24 or 25, I took a job bartending at a place that did comedy once a week. And I would watch these comics. I'm like, oh, this is how I can do it. So I was watching them, and I would talk to the comics. And then one day they said, hey, we need somebody to MC. And I didn't even, I'm like, I know that you have to host it. I've never stepped on stage before in my life. And they said, would you want to MC it? And I said, yeah, I'll do this every week. No idea what I'm getting myself into. So I get up there and I have what I thought was 5 minutes of jokes, because this is the first time ever up on stage in front of a sold out paid crowd.
Wow.
I'm giving it a shot. I'm the first one going up cold. It went horrible. I think I lasted about 30 seconds before I went, yeah, you guys, I'm done. Here's your next comic. I'm done. And wow. I already agreed to do it every week, because I just thought I was just going to be amazing at it. So it was too late for me to back out. So every week I'm just stressing over trying to come up with something else. And then, like Scott said, the first time I got a laugh, I'm like, oh, this is, yeah, too late. I can't get out. Like, I'm done. It's like,
gotcha.
It's like crack. I can't stop. Yeah. It's just, I think I've tried quitting like 3 or 4 times. And so usually when I hear like these younger comics say like, oh, I did bad at an open mic, I'm like, yeah. Let me tell you about my first time.
but you know, you only get better.
Yeah, no, and that's it. Yeah. I think, and I always wanted to skip the step like of MCing, because you know, like I'm the first guy, nobody really listens, you know, and you want to jump the next. And there was a couple of comics in Minneapolis, like Wild Bill, like Scott said, Wild Bill was kind of my mentor. He's the one that he would come to Central Wisconsin and he would say, "This is what you want to do," but he always said, "Don't skip steps." He goes, because if you want to be a headliner, you have to learn how to MC. If you know, right. If you skip that part, you're never going to headline. So I'm glad that he was there and he kind of talked me through it. And now I'm headlining and doing corporates. And so.
And there aren't many people that will take the steps that Wild Bill and Scott and Louie have done, and, you know, to help our careers, I guess I can call it. But yeah, there aren't many that will do that. And yeah, I'm very appreciative, you know, to those guys for taking the time and just giving me stage time and you know, and but I asked Scott, I said, you know, how do I get more time with you? He says, put some butts in the seats. And so that's what it's about. I mean, it's about inviting everybody you know, and hopefully 5 of them show up. And
see,
and,
but you had Minneapolis and St. Paul area. Yeah, I actually had to open a comedy club just so I could get more time. I opened up my own comedy club. I ran that thing for 6 years just basically to get stage time. I mean, I would bring other comics and I knew what they were doing, but it was just more about me just getting my MC time.
Awesome. So with your What's your comedy style? Because I know each comic has something a little different. Some people do impressions, some people, you know, they're physical comedians, you know. So what's your comic style?
I do wacky accounting humor, and nobody's doing that material. So there's not a lot of competition out there for it. And so, and it's self-deprecating, it's a little white collar crime and that kind of stuff. And
Right.
so yeah, it a little religion stuff. And so Sister
Okay.
Mary Margaret whipped me into shape as a kid, you know. And so, but
See,
yeah.
I'd say mine's more, I'd say like kind of Ray Romano, like that style, like just it's about the kids, about the family, kind of
About
more family
vitiligo.
friendly, and yeah, vitiligo. I don't
All
think he
right.
talks about that, but
I'm gonna have to start writing some stuff on vitiligo. I can see that
yeah.
already. Yeah.
You go up to somebody and say, hey, connect the dots and
Yeah. Well,
try to
yeah.
find all your spots on your body. Yeah.
Well.
Now, so for Kevin, when you are talking about your vitiligo on stage and cracking jokes and things, how does your crowd receive you? Or is, you know, how is
It's
that?
I think it's tough because trying to explain it to people without
Right.
oversimplifying it, that was the tricky part, is because sometimes I think if they're not on board with what it is, they don't get the joke. So it's like you
Right.
almost have to, and I thought of like going in depth and explaining it really fast of like the melanocytes and getting really into like,
Right.
but I'm like, I don't know if that'd be funny. And it's so I think if they understand what it is or at least heard of it, because that's why I bring up Michael Jackson. So then it's like, okay, now you understand what I'm saying. This is and then. But sometimes they miss that part or they just aren't paying attention at the right spot
Absolutely.
and falls flat. So sometimes I just leave that joke out because it's like, yeah, you guys aren't smart enough to get this next one. So
Yeah, you kind of gotta, you have to know your audience. Absolutely.
it's one of those jokes.
Now, real quick, and we're gonna move into a few other things, and then we're gonna get close to the end. Not to dig deep into what happened recently with between Chris Rock and Will Smith, but have you ever had any hecklers or challenges, you know, as a comedian on the stage, or ever a moment where you felt, this might not go well tonight, you know, just maybe somebody out there who had a little bit too much of the adult juice and, you know, everything else?
Well, I think for me, I look at hecklers different. I think a lot of people think hecklers like what Will Smith did. I don't even know if that's a heckle. That was just,
No,
you know what I mean? That
that
was
was
just,
something else, yeah.
yeah. And then somebody tackled Dave Chappelle shortly after that
Right,
too. They
yeah,
got him on
right.
stage, but like, so that stuff is, I think, few and far between. But like the heckling, I think some people think like, oh, I'm gonna yell something out at the comic. That's kind of rare. Like sometimes it's
Okay.
people like, oh, that happened to me, and they yell stuff, which isn't heckling. That's just how they're having fun or entertaining. You know, like that's so they don't realize that they're being a nuisance. So you can't really yell at them for doing that because they're having fun, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, can you be quiet? You know, you're basically
Right.
telling them, stop laughing.
Yeah.
So it's as far as the heckling, I mean, it's kind of a rarity. I think the thing that irritates me more is the phones that people stare at because you can see their
Right.
face. And it's like, if you're not even going to listen, like, what's the point of being here? Like, just so that's what I consider more heckling now. It's just like,
Gotcha.
that's for me is like, yeah, don't do that because I'm going to call that out.
'Cause they don't realize they have that glow on their face
Yeah,
as they're looking down
they
and
have
nobody can
no.
see
They
it.
think they're
Like,
being sneaky
hello?
too. They hide it under the table. It's just like I can see you all lit up. Like I know what you're
Look,
doing. You know.
kids do it in school. I'm like,
Yeah.
why do you have a phone? What do you mean? I said, first of all, your eyes are in your head, you're looking down. I mean, you're not looking at the floor. There's nothing down there but dirt. I mean, like, you're looking at your phone. Put your phone away. You're not even supposed to have it out. Well, put it away. But like you said, people think they're slick and you're not. If you go to watch comedy, watch the comic on stage, you know, pay
Yeah.
attention.
Actually,
And I'm
I just went to a concert recently. I was and the singer, so they said no phones. And I got there early. Nobody was out. I mean, it was just everybody's just walking around, no band, nothing's going on. I took a picture of the stage and the guy came up and said, hey, no phones. They don't want you to have phones. And I was like, well, nothing's happening. Like I thought I'm not supposed to videotape an empty stage. Like I it just didn't
Right.
make sense.
Yeah.
But the last end of the show, like the singer of the band, he's just like, you know, like we know stuff's going on in the world, but you can wait 2 hours. It's still going to be there. in 2 hours. So just, you don't need to bring it out. Yeah. And I thought, I'm going to try to do that at my shows, but I don't have the clout that they have, so.
Absolutely. Put your phones away and don't come back. You can wait 2 hours or whatever. No, they'll look at you like you're crazy.
We'll just wait outside when you're done. Yeah.
And I don't get a lot of hecklers. I don't get hecklers because I think they're just amazed that I'm even up on stage telling jokes. They're just focused and not. But I don't have any problem with phones either. You'll get people that talk through the show that shouldn't be talking, and so I've seen some people who've annoyed the comic enough that he's asked them to leave. I mean, big name comics that have basically said get out, and people are all upset and they're gonna go complain to the owners. It's like, no, you're not the show. The comic on stage is the show. That's where your focus needs to be. You're annoying everybody around you because you're not paying attention and you're not Absolutely. Focused on what's going on, and you're ruining it for other people. And so, and that really is the part that I think is most annoying. So,
yep. So let's talk real quick, and then we're going to get to the end. So World Vitiligo Day 2022 is almost here, right around the corner. We've been waiting for... It seemed like for ages for this event to happen. Every time it's going to happen next year. Nope, canceled. So what can the audience expect from you two that night?
Well, they told me no off-color jokes, and I'm saying everybody here is off-color.
I mean, we all have four different colors going. Right? Which one do you not want me to be on?
But again, they're going to get some wacky accounting humor that they've never heard before, and I think that'll be interesting.
Well, I hope they get laughs. Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah,
there will be laughs. There will be laughs for everybody.
That's good, and that's what we want. We, like I said, we need that. We, you know, for the past, I'm gonna say 3 years, we've just been. Excuse me, bombarded with everything from, you know, what we see internationally, what we're seeing around, you know, our country and sometimes locally. We just need to get out and laugh and have fun and be able to enjoy one another's company. No stress, none of that. Well, we definitely don't need any stress because we don't need more vitiligo spots popping up at the convention, you know. We just need to just enjoy each other, you know, and put all the politics and all the BS aside. Just all that needs to go out the door.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and it's one thing with laughter is it does reduce stress. So that's what they say. So
our vitiligo should be going away.
Yeah. I know. Maybe that was part of our problem. We weren't laughing enough, and bam, vitiligo popped up.
Yeah.
We start, you know. So hey, we're gonna think about that. We need to get laugh tracks in everything we do, so people can just say, "Hey, I'm enjoying myself." But I really appreciate you guys coming on. What I'm going to do is start with Scott and then Kevin to give our listeners, because this show is heard around the world. We had 39 countries. We're probably at 37 simply because of what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, you know, between those two. So I'm sure we've lost both of them at this point. But this show is heard around the world, and our listeners do reach out on Facebook. So if you can just share some type of words of encouragement or something for our community, those with and without vitiligo.
Yeah. You know, we do have to get together. We got to get our friends. We got to communicate better. We got to get out of our houses. We've got to talk to our neighbors. We've got to talk to the people down the street. The hard part has been, you know, we've been threatened with COVID and people have you know, stayed home and protected themselves. But we've got to check on the lady down the street because she needs some help. And we got to talk to mom and dad and make sure that they're getting out and doing the things that are necessary. And boy, I can't tell you enough, just check on your neighbors and don't be afraid to laugh. Let's, you know, they're all afraid right now that humor is dying. And boy, if humor dies, then, you know, we as a civilization have lost our way, and so don't be afraid to laugh. Yes, sometimes our laughter can hurt a little bit, but that's all comedy is based on, a little bit of hurt in there, or the truth, I guess, is more really how it is. comedy is based on the truth, and sometimes the truth gets us a little bit, but boy, don't be afraid to shrug it off and say, yeah, that was funny. You want to laugh at me? Great. I have no problem. Like I say, I said, don't worry. I says, you know, that, you know, don't be afraid, because everybody's already laughing at you. So, you know, we're in a point where, hey, let's just have some fun together and keep moving forward, because there's a lot of life left to live.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Scott. Kevin.
Well, I think as I got older, I started realizing that, like, because I mean, the goal of getting into comedy at first, we're going to get fame, we're going to get money, all that. But honestly, the older I get, I think I'm starting to fully understand, like, we all should just kind of be happy where we're at, you know, like, just what was it Marcus Aurelius said, fame's fleeting and we're all mortal. Like, yeah. It's all temporary. So I think it's important. Like Scott was saying, be more social. You'd think with all the social media, we'd feel connected, but honestly, I don't think it does that. It actually feels like it's dividing, but yeah, we should like build our relationships, personal relationships, like the old way, like face to face talking, you know?
Absolutely.
And just, I think just be content where you're at and be happy with what you have. It can get worse, you know, and it just, I mean, that's, it's life. I mean, it's just, I think we enjoy what we can of it, and there's going to be ups and downs. I mean, you can't have heads without tails. You got to just have to deal with what you got.
Absolutely. And, you know, all that, what both of you said is very important. You know, that laughter can help us get to those hard moments, you know. And I know sometimes people say, well, why are you laughing? You know, that's a serious situation. Sometimes you have to laugh to keep from crying.
Yeah.
And even if you're crying, you have to find those moments where you find some joy and happiness deep down inside. So that is important, and that goes for all of us, for our vitiligo community, for our family, friends, you know, people that are associates with us. You know, we got to find those moments that make us smile, whether it's a big moment or a little moment. And for you guys, I appreciate you two coming on the show, spending some time with me. And for the listeners out there, I thank you for listening in. Now, as I always tell my listeners, you know, one of the most important things we need to do is show love, you know, love your friends, love your family, love your neighbor, love your enemy. But most of all, look in the mirror and tell yourself, I love you. Once again, Scott, Kevin, thank you very much for being on the show. I look Thanks forward for to us. Meeting you two in Minnesota.
Thank you so much, all Mark. Right. See you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
See ya.
You have been listening to BitFriends Podcast, Living Life and Love. I'm your host, Mark Braxton from Raleigh, North Carolina. BitFriends podcasts are sponsored by my Vitiligo team.